Today, I want to talk a little bit about Apache Cordova. Yesterday, we talked about Xamarin, and you saw a presentation earlier about the Murely, the folks that have been using it in production to build their app. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about a different model for cross-platform development. And we'll talk about the trade-offs and the differences between them. So I want to make clear what Apache Cordova is, but also I'm going to be talking about Apache Cordova with Visual Studio, which is kind of a new option for people to use Visual Studio and this toolkit to build cross-platform applications for mobile. So if you remember, we talked yesterday about the different options for mobile app development. We can use the native tools and the native programming languages. We can do cross-platform with C++ and C#. But I also mentioned this notion of cross-platform with HTML and JavaScript. Now, where the others really target native applications and providing a native experience, the HTML and JavaScript option is really more about a consistent experience across devices. So instead of having an app look like an iOS application on an Apple device and look like an Android application on an Android device, it's going to look like your application on all those devices and look the same. But you're going to leverage, in this case, HTML and JavaScript. So how many folks are web developers? Excellent. Okay. So a lot of the same challenges that we talked about yesterday with switching between tools are addressed with this model as well. Right? We get to use one programming language, depending on whether you think HTML and CSS are programming languages, but JavaScript, HTML and CSS, so we're not switching between contexts. But take that one step further, we're not also going to be thinking about activities in Android or the storyboards in iOS. We're really going to be thinking about web pages, HTML, to do all of our rendering. So in this case, not only are we going to have one user interface model, but we're also going to have one set of code. Not just shared, but one set of JavaScript that will run on all these different platforms. Now, before I dive into this, I have to give you a task, because it's the last talk and I have to keep you engaged, right? So here's your task. When I start my demo in a few minutes, you have to remind me about the security, okay? All right, I see some heads nodding. I'm going to come back to those people that were nodding heads. Because if I don't, we all know what happens when you forget security, right? Credit card numbers get stolen. I'm not saying that'll happen here. I'm just saying we should be careful. So, Apache Cordova is an open source framework for building these cross-platform applications using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Why am I talking about that with Visual Studio? As you've seen in a couple of the talks yesterday and today, Microsoft has really embraced open source, not just for their technologies and their things, but they want to embrace it for a lot of others as well. Right? They're building their own applications, cross-platform, Office running on iOS, right? Office running on Android. And so they want Visual Studio to be that tool, and Windows, of course, to be the tool that you use to build mobile applications. And they recognize that today, if you're building mobile applications, Windows Phone might not be at the top of your list. Right? So if you've heard of Cordova, you may be thinking about PhoneGap. Cordova is the open source framework, right? Managed, maintained by the Apache Foundation. PhoneGap is a particular commercial implementation. So Adobe wraps up the Apache Cordova components, and they give you tools for doing things like building in the cloud and test suites and things like that. So they're not really interchangeable, But often people use the terms interchangeably. So Cordova is the underlying piece, which is what we're going to be talking about. You may have heard of Ionic. Again, Ionic is a framework that builds on top of PhoneGap for doing user interfaces. If you've done web development, it's much like a bootstrap, Twitter bootstrap for your web pages. Ionic gives you that kind of layer of abstraction and productivity for your views. And then, of course, you don't have to use Visual Studio. I'm showing you the capabilities in Visual Studio. A lot of us are Microsoft focused. We use that tool regularly. And it's a newer feature, so I want to show you how you can take advantage of it and what benefits you get from working within Visual Studio. So how does this work? We're writing HTML, we're writing JavaScript, but we're going to deploy this to an iOS device or Android or Windows. Well, you're going to write standard HTML, JavaScript, CSS. You don't have to do anything particular there. And then on each of these platforms, they all have the notion of a web control or a web view. Right? So that you can, in an iOS application, if you need to render some HTML, there's a control for that. And on each of the platforms. And so what Cordova does, it takes all of this HTML and code that you've written, packages it up into a wrapper application. So it's a native application with a web view, and they then present your content inside of there. So this is where this differs from, say, creating a mobile website. Right? For one, you can run offline, but you're also installed on the device. It's not a mobile website that they're browsing to. You're on the device and installed for that user. And that has some benefits, one of which is, as we'll see, you get to take advantage of device sensors, device features like cameras and the file system that you wouldn't be able to in most cases from a web application. So in Visual Studio, what they've done is they've taken all of the pieces that are required to do Cordova development, and they've put the Visual Studio shell around those. Now, if you've done any development with Cordova or anything involving Java or Android, you know there's a lot of things to install. Right? You need the Java SDK, you need the Java NDK, the native development kit. Right? When they first were doing this and you installed and said, I want to do cross-platform development, Visual Studio installed Chrome on my system, which I thought was the strangest thing, that Visual Studio was installing Google's Chrome browser. Surprisingly, they didn't ask me if I wanted it to be the default, but it was installing it. I'm recalling that last time I installed it, it didn't ask, so they may have changed that when they released. But they're installing all of these other pieces with the goal that when you install Visual Studio and say you want to do cross-platform development, you don't have to go find all the right versions and all these different packages and install them yourself and get the path set up so that Visual Studio can find them. Right? As part of the installation of Visual Studio, it does that for you. But it also creates the Visual Studio project system that you're familiar with. Right? And it gives you the build capabilities that you're familiar with. If you're doing Cordova without Visual Studio, you may be going to the command line and saying, hey, I want to add the Windows platform as a target. I want to add Android as a target. With Visual Studio, you simply go in the dropdown for the target and say, hey, I want to run this on Android. And again, it takes care of, for you, all those details of interacting with Cordova to make that happen. Right? It also adds the custom editor. So we're not messing with an XML file to handle all of the configuration for these different platforms. And as I showed you yesterday, not necessarily as part of this, but in general, with Visual Studio 2015, they shipped this Visual Studio emulator for Android based on Hyper-V. So if you're doing Windows and you're doing Windows Phone or you're already using Hyper-V as your virtualization, you don't have to go install Box or some other virtualization to do that. So it plays nice with Windows Phone, which of course they want you to run as well. Now, the emulator, the Apache Cordova tools, I'm going to show you in Visual Studio 2015, but they're available, both of them, for 2013 as well. In fact, the emulator you can download and run as a standalone. So if you're using Eclipse, first of all, I'm sorry that you have to use Eclipse, but you could at least run this emulator to run your application. It is connected to just like any other Android emulator, uses the same debugging tools, but gives you a nice, fast experience. So if I come over into Visual Studio, you'll see that I've got, under JavaScript and under TypeScript, the option of creating this Cordova app. How many of you are familiar with TypeScript? Oh, PowerPoint. Every time I run PowerPoint, it switches me from duplicated. All right. That's better. Thank you for pointing that out, by the way. So for both JavaScript and TypeScript, I can create this Cordova project. Anybody using TypeScript today? One, two? Kind of? I'm shaky. So you have the choice, right? And because TypeScript is just JavaScript, at the end, when they transpile it, right, then you get that, that same capability. So let's come in here. We will do a new project, and we'll use JavaScript just to keep it simple. And so this is going to set me up now with a project that, like I said, unlike the Xamarin project I did yesterday where I had an iOS project, an Android project, and my shared library, this is going to give me one project over here that I can use to target all of those different platforms. So I'm going to have one set of source code that will run across all of them. And for the web developers, you'll probably see some familiar things out there, package.json, bower.json. And we have, of course, our www folder here with scripts and CSS and our index.html. That's your cue. Come on. Ah, security. Thank you for reminding me. I totally would have forgotten. So this is actually something new, which is why I was conscious of it, because they changed it recently. When you're running this on your phone, okay, and you've got the HTML and JavaScript running, you're hosted in a web view. Well, there's potential that if you've got HTML and JavaScript and you're in a web view, something can happen to navigate you outside of the confines of your app. You present something that has a link, whether you intended to or not, and somebody clicks on that, right? You may not want to have that external content or JavaScript or any, you know, cross-site scripting sorts of things loaded in. So by default, this security meta tag, right, is going to basically lock down and say, look, I'm only going to display local HTML. I'm only going to apply local CSS, and I'm only going to run this local JavaScript. Well, what we're going to do is go out to Twitter, and we're going to see what people are saying about the conference. So I'm going to make sure that for data, I can go out to the Twitter API. So I'm just going to put the URL in there for Twitter, indicating that if I want to use the XML HTTP request, either directly or through jQuery or some library, I'm going to be able to access that particular API. So you have to be very explicit about what data, what content your application should be able to reach. All right, so I'm going to take the basic content was there, and let's just add in some content. So we're just going to create a basic form. Right, it has a label, an input box, and a button. We're going really old school HTML here, nothing too fancy. And then I've got a definition list where I can put the results. So before I'm going to be able to run this, let's go to our scripts folder. I'm going to add in my a JavaScript file here. And this is just a wrapper around Twitter search, because I figured you didn't want to watch me type all that. So this is just going to make HTTP requests to the Twitter API, do a search, and return me some results. And since I have to authorize, so I have all these keys that I have to pass in order to do that. So we're going to use that as we go as our functionality. And then we also have an index.js, which is loaded by our main page there. And it's already populated with some specific JavaScript for the fact that we're running on a device. I'm going to put just some regular JavaScript in there, but you can see we get events for when the device is ready, right? The Cordova runtime, the wrappers have kind of been initialized, and it's ready to go. So we know it's almost like a document on ready for the web. We know things are ready, and we can start processing. But it also has lifecycle events, like on pause and on resume. Because again, we're using web technologies, but we're running on a device. So often you need to save state when it pauses, right? When you switch context to another app, or you need to load state or do something different when you switch back. And so we get those lifecycle events here as well. So there's my Twitter search. So I'm using basic JavaScript things like get element by ID. Right? I'm going to clear out the list. And then I'll go get that search term, do my search, and then write some really ugly string manipulation in here, right? Or DOM manipulation to append these things onto the list. And there's a reason for that. I'll tell you in a minute. So we have our index.js here. I do need to add my Twitter service, though. Let's add that in. Now, up here you can see this is targeting Android. And I'm going to run it on this Ripple emulator for Nexus Galaxy. Before I do that, let me go look at the config for this, because as I'm targeting these different platforms, I want to be able to make sure it's configured. So config XML is just an XML file, but this is one of the things they've added in Visual Studio as a designer over that. So I can go look at the platform, right? What version of Apache Cordova am I using? But I can also go and tweak the Windows. So I could say, oh, I'm targeting Windows 8 or I'm targeting Windows 10. Android, I can put in, right, particular SDK versions that I'm targeting. So just like we did yesterday with Xamarin, I can say, here's my minimum, here's my maximum, I'm going to test on these platforms in order to make sure this works. Now, if anybody's done iOS development, you know that there are way more than four settings for an iOS application. There's going to be some work at the end when you go to package. You're going to have to do some additional work to package up the metadata for the iOS application. But we can run that. So this Ripple emulator is the reason that I have Chrome installed. It's the reason they were installing it initially. And what it does is it pulls up in Chrome and emulates different devices for Android and for iOS. Collapse that for a second. Right? So as fast as the Android emulator is, this is even faster. So if I just want to look and see, the HTML looks roughly correct, right? It looks like what I want to do, I could even come in then and say, okay, well, let me do a search and see if I got everything working. See if I got everything working. That's where it's supposed to work. Aha! No, I don't want TypeScript. Oh, there it is. It says says it refuses to execute the inline event handler because it violates the following content security policy. I have data gap, unsafe eval. The unsafe inline keyword. Oh, okay. I thought that was in there. Let's check, though. So it's basically telling me I didn't quite do the security part right, which is nice that it actually tells me that. Yeah, unsafe eval, unsafe inline. All right, well, let's put it over here as well. All right, let's try that again and see if it likes that any better. Ah, there we go. Now the ones that are, don't forget about security, see? Right at the top. Good job, Bruno. I'm not going to read all these because that can be dangerous in the middle of a presentation. But now we can see, right, we have some functionality. We have it working. And very quickly, because it's HTML and JavaScript, test it in the browser. Right? And so if we come over to things like the devices, right, it's on a Nexus Galaxy now. Oh my gosh, I can change it to a BlackBerry. I can do a Nexus 7 tablet. Right? And it'll reload that and display it there. So you know, we're getting not even emulated. Right? It's a wrapper around the HTML, but often with HTML, you're focused on those little style things, those little issues about how things lay out at different sizes. This works great for figuring that out and making sure that it works and testing some of the basic functionality that that you might have as well. Now, how many of you looked at my my JavaScript here and you web folks and said, I haven't done that kind of JavaScript programming for years. What library would you use to go and manipulate the DOM and to go find items and things like that? jQuery? What? Angular or Knockout? You use some a higher level framework, right? Okay, we can do that. Okay. Bootstrap, Angular, Java or jQuery. All those things we can leverage here, right? And so when we talk about leveraging your web skills, we don't just mean really old HTML and JavaScript. We mean the stuff you actually like to use, like Angular and like jQuery. Now, today, there are probably about 500 different package managers. I might be exaggerating a little bit, but there are a lot of different package managers, right? And so I have this package.json out here, right? That's for the for NPM, for Node Package Manager. I had a bower.json. I just deleted it because I'm going to replace it, right? So again, not just the tools that you use within the pages, the JavaScript frameworks, the CSS libraries and things, but even the tools that you would use to manage packages, to run tasks, are going to be supported in here. So we have this this piece here. Let's go and look at. I've got a few dependencies here. Actually, yeah, dev dependencies is a good idea. Okay. So for NPM, I'm going to tell it that I will have dependencies in dev for Gulp, which is a task runner for client-side technologies, and Bower. And it's telling me, hey, these aren't installed, so I'll restore packages. And so it's going to go in, it's going to install those for me, and now I'll have access to those things. Likewise, if I come to the app and I say add existing item, I'm going to go out here and grab three files, actually. So I've added a file for Bower that basically tells it, hey, when you install things, put them under www/scripts. Because all my actual web content, right, the stuff that isn't related to packaging and things like that, is under this www folder. And then in there, I've said that for the client side, I want all those things we talked about. I want Angular, I want Angular Resource, I want Bootstrap. Now if I come up to Bower, probably make sure I save these, the Bower dependencies, I can click on that, restore packages. If we go look here, we might catch it. We should see under the scripts then, it's going to go pull down for me Angular, Angular Resource, Bootstrap, and of course jQuery because the others depend on that. Right. How many of you are using either NPM or Bower? A couple. Right. If you're not familiar with them, they're NuGet for other stuff. Right. Bower is NuGet for client technologies. NPM is what's used a lot by Node and some other frameworks for doing package management. And so the reason I want to point that out is that, again, Microsoft is kind of embracing the fact that NuGet, while that's their model for doing .NET stuff, isn't the model everyone uses, especially for web development. And so they want to support those tools here in the Cordova applications, as well as, of course, ASP.NET. And just another example of that, if we go look, right, this is new in Visual Studio 2015. I have this task runner. Gulp, Grunt, there's other popular ones as well. They're just JavaScript files, but you want to run them as part of your development process to do things like maybe delete minified CSS and JavaScript, and then take your source and minify it. So these are tasks that you do as part of your builds, and even as you're doing development, potentially as part of your builds to make that happen. So they support those files. They support Gulp and Grunt, and they know about those. And so I could come in here. I have an old task to run Bower before they added it in at the last minute. So I could go out and build that. But I can also right-click on that Bower and say I want to associate it to the before build. And now you can see it's moved over here. And now every time I build, Visual Studio has this whole notion of before build, after build, when you clean the project. Now all I have to do is just hit build, right? And all of my client-side tasks are kind of hooked into that build process, so I don't have to do it manually. We'll clean that up for now. We don't need that extra step. So we've added jQuery, we've added Bootstrap and Angular. Let's go back to our index here. So now if we go to Bootstrap, to the distribution and the CSS. I can grab Bootstrap and add it in as a style sheet there. Come down to the bottom here, we'll add in that jQuery so we don't have to look at my old ugly JavaScript anymore. So now we've got our jQuery in there and our Bootstrap. So let's take advantage of those. We'll just do something basic here with our code. So we'll say that's a container. So Bootstrap will see that as a container and apply some changes. And then on the button, for example, we could go in and add a class, right, for a primary button. There's a couple of Bootstrap things. We'll see how those impact things. And I can go back over then and fix up my ugly JavaScript here. That's a lot less code. Right. So that makes me happy now. I've got that that jQuery in there. It's a lot cleaner, a lot easier to read, a lot easier to write. And I have all that in there. So now I'm going to take advantage of jQuery and Bootstrap, and let's go ahead and run this on that Android emulator. That's not Android. That's Android. There we go. Right. So again, I can use the Ripple emulator if I want just really quick, look at the layout, look at some of the base functionality, but I can use the Visual Studio emulator. If you have the Xamarin stuff in and their emulator, you can use that. You can use the Google emulator, right? Any of those kind of standard Android emulators you can take advantage of and test it out. I'm trusting you now that you know it's showing on the screen not to do anything no misbehaving. So now we've got this displayed here. Does anybody notice anything different from the last time? This is how I see if you were looking at the piece. The button's blue. Big change, right? That's coming from our bootstrap. It also actually, the definition list at the bottom, the results look much nicer. Right? Just by applying bootstrap, it aligns it better. It bolds the titles a little bit, right? So everything looks a little more neatly aligned. We're not jammed up against the side. Oh, I should have stayed out of here because now it's going to do that thing. So all of those different libraries, we picked Angular. You can use Knockout. You could use Ionic. You know, whatever those particular things are that that you want to use. Now we talk about HTML and JavaScript and say, oh, it'll work on all of them. But again, that's not reality, right? So you're going to have differences in devices. If you're on iOS, right, they're all fairly similar, although they have some different sizes now. If you're on Android, lots and lots of differences, whether it's the size of the device, the version of Android that's running, number of different things that could be different, right? And so there's going to be a need for you to write some code or to do some things slightly differently for those different platforms. I'm on to you now, PowerPoint. So in this index.html, you may have noticed this script here, right? Pointing to scripts, platformoverrides.js. And if I go over and look at my scripts, I see what amazing things Platform Overrides does. It's an empty file. It doesn't do anything. It's a placeholder in the main application, in that main source. And what happens then is when I build for Android, it's going to look for a platformoverrides.js for the Android devices and insert that into my content. If I'm building for Windows Phone, it's going to look for a Windows Phone script. So if we go to this merges folder up here, we'll see there's actually already one in there for Android. And it's coming in here, right? And setting this up and says, look, I want to go into the document, the DOM, create a new script element, and I want to reference this kind of other JavaScript file for Android 2.3. So if you're running that particular version, that's going to check and do some interesting things to set up compatibility for that particular version. So we can do just a simple example. Or I can say, I want to create a script element here. But only if it's Android should this work. So I'm going to just set up an alert, right? And then append this script tag to the body. So when this runs on Android, it should run that. So just for speed, we'll switch back to the ripple here and see if that works. So now since the ripple is emulating Android, when this runs, that script from the merges got pulled into our content, deployed as part of the app, and so that script tag that we added runs here. Now if I go and switch this over, not to a device, we say I want to run this on Windows Phone, now it should fire up here, and we shouldn't see that content running. We shouldn't get the pop-up warning because we're not on Android. However, if you dig into the files for Windows Phone, you'll see this exact same kind of targeting because, by default, if you've done any Windows Phone where you try and use the JavaScript libraries, the building Windows Store apps with JavaScript, and you try and use jQuery or Angular, you'll hit all sorts of security problems because of the way they manipulate the DOM. By default, it goes against the Windows Phone or Windows Store security policy. So this should fail. But we have one of these files in there for Windows Phone, that says, look, when it's Windows Phone, I'm going to go in and change some things about the document and about the model so that I can get past those security issues and allow things like jQuery and Angular and our other libraries to work here. Not even going to turn this on. There we go. So we've got a slightly different code that we can run on different platforms, right? But we also want to be able to access device features, right? This is supposed to be one of the benefits of this model, is that it's not just a web page, right? I want to get at the camera. I want to get at your location through the device. I want to get at any of those kind of features, the file system, any of those things that can make this feel more like a native app, that can give me those same kind of features that are there. And so we have these different platforms with shared code, right? And the way this works then is we have this notion of what's called a plugin. And a plugin essentially for, say, a camera would give you code that's gonna run, that's the shim, right? Like a JavaScript facade that the application will see and use, and then implementations of that facade for all the different platforms. So again, I'll have code for Android, which is written in Java. I'll have code that'll run on the Windows Phone, which is C#. And all of those things work with these plugins. So let's go back to our lovely config XML here. We'll add this one last thing. So I'm going to go to camera and add it. And then I'm going to go down to notifications and add that. And these are core ones that Microsoft and others have put in. You can see they have Active Directory authentication, clearly a Microsoft choice there. But a lot of these are the most common plugins that people use. So you have access to the contact list on the device. You have access to the battery to find out the state of the battery or the file system, geolocation, media, all sorts of things here. But if the one you want isn't there, these things are usually just file system based, so you can point to a Git repository. Say, there's the plugin that I want, pull that in. Right? Or here's a file system space where I want to pull this in. So those are installed. We'll do one last set of changes here, and then we'll wrap up. We've got our index.js and our index.html. Let's come down here. My code snippet. Camera capture, right? So we're going to go out and all of these plugins get access through this navigator object. So navigator.camera, get a picture, right? And then we're going to update our index.html here. We're going to put an image in. And I'll just say the alt is they are supposed to be smiling. See if you guys actually do it. Right. And the ID then is audience smiling. Right. So we'll put that in, and then I'm going to add a button to just invoke that that function. So that was take picture. Let's say the value is smile, right? So now I've got another button on there. Switch this over, it'll work better on Android. And we're gonna run it on our device. So one of the great things about this emulator is that you have all these extra tools. So you can set things like location, you can mess with the accelerometer and how the device is positioned. And for the camera, then, you can either use a file, you can have it give you a generated kind of mess that you can take a picture of, or if you've got a camera device on your laptop or your desktop, you can use that. And that is actually a feature that doesn't exist in the Windows Phone. Hey, we're on Android, so our Android-only code is running. All right, now, it says smile. Let's see if this works. All right, last session of the conference. Oh, I can't see. Bright lights. Okay, I can't get you all in and there's bright lights, but, oh, and now I gotta be able to click. All right, you smiling? Oh, I'm waving, smile. I'm going to put it on Twitter. I won't. But there we go. So we've got that picture. Oh, it came out sideways because it's big. And there it is on our screen. So I was able to take the picture with the camera, right? And now we've got the picture here on the screen of all of your smiling faces. You have to zoom in and see if you actually smiled, right? And so we're able to take advantage of the device, right? So what I'll leave you with on that is that this is a platform for leveraging those web skills, right? It allows you to create applications and run them on these multiple platforms, but it's not for everything. One of the benefits I talked about with Xamarin the other day was that you could build tailored user interfaces, right, that look like an iOS application or an Android application. With this kind of model, you're typically building one that looks exactly the same. Now, if you're doing a broad consumer application, if it's a game, maybe that's okay, because people expect games to kind of have their own look and feel and interaction. But if it's a consumer app, maybe not, because then you have all these people that are experiencing a slightly different paradigm for an app. But if you're building an application for a known group, like a set of employees or field agents, having them all have the exact same application and the same look and feel and the buttons in the same place can be a big benefit, because when you're on the phone and you're talking to them and you're saying, push this button, you know that button is in the top right, and it didn't get moved because it's an iOS device. Right? You don't need to know what kind of device they're on generally, because you know the app looks this way, and I can follow through and see how that's going to work. Right? So, Apache Cordova is free. The tools in Visual Studio, free as long as you have Visual Studio. Right? The emulator, free. So it's a good model for you to get in and start playing around with that. And again, it's good for certain situations where that's a model that works, where the same look and feel works for you. It's not native, right? It's hosted in a web view, and so things like somebody asked in the Xamarin talk about, you know, using the hardware and the GPU, there are definitely issues with that, right? You're hosting this in that web view, and even on iOS, they may have addressed it now, but PhoneGap was using an older web view control on iOS that had worse performance. So while it was possible to get better performance on iOS, people weren't seeing it with PhoneGap because they hadn't started using that yet. Right? There are definitely some issues with it, but there are also some definite use cases where you can very quickly build that application and get it running and have it ready on lots of different devices. So thank you, and any questions? You all just want to go to the party, don't you?
Okay.
I don't blame you.
Hello.
Hello.
Cordova integrate NFC technology or Xamarin?
I'm sorry?
Uses NFC tokens?
You would have to have a plugin for doing NFC. But I would be surprised if there isn't one out there for doing NFC with Cordova.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the kinds of things, the hardware-specific device features where there will be a plugin. And again, if it's not in that list, I've found that Microsoft really put a curated, limited list of the most popular ones. And so there's a lot on GitHub and other places that you can add with that custom tab to get things like NFC and other things that might not be in the most popular.
Okay, yeah. Thanks. Mm-hmm.